Hello, friends. I'm Chris Chavez, and welcome back to the Sidious Mag podcast. This is my show where I chat with some of the biggest names on the track, on the roads, within the coaching ranks, and across the running industry. Our guests sit down and open up in depth to share their experiences, brilliant insights, and vivid snapshots from their professional and personal accomplishments within the sport. Before we get into the episode, I also want to thank all of our backers on Patreon who keep us going strong. With your support, we're able to plan for on-site coverage at races. It helps us with travel costs, helps us with website and podcast expenses, helps us with editing across all of the different shows on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network. You can see all the work for yourself for free on YouTube, this podcast feed, Instagram, Twitter, and of course, SidiousMag.com. So shout out to Justin Wong, Mary Vogan, and Nina Coolidge for signing up within recent weeks. If you want to support our work, sign up today at patreon.com/sidiousmag. On Patreon, you can donate anything from $1 a month, and we've been to have some people contribute $20 a month. For those of you who are unable to commit to a monthly pledge, you can also make a one-time donation by sending any dollar amount over to Sidious Mag on Venmo. Consider Venmo like a virtual tip jar. You chip in, attach any message you want, and we'll shout it out on the next pod. We just got a contribution from Bilingual Speechworks who said, "Thank you for being such a great podcast. Love the way Chris and Kyle interview. Truly appreciate that." And last thing to note, sponsorship slots are now open for 2023 on the Sidious Mag podcast and the Lap Count newsletter. If you want to reserve some space to promote your brand, product, event, or whatever to our followers, do not hesitate to reach out. Email chris@sidiousmag.com for a full list of our offerings and our rates. It's one of the most direct ways to tap into our dedicated following of track and field nerds, running superfans, coaches, and other fantastic people within the industry who appreciate our commentary and our storytelling within the sport. Spaces are limited, so we look forward to hearing from you soon. Thanks to everyone for their continued support. Scott Fauble is back on the podcast for a seventh time, which may be a record for a recurring guest. It's funny to go back and look at the archives because when he first came on the show, it was back in 2017 and it was ahead of his marathon debut. And look at him now as one of the top U.S. marathoners. He just finished as the top American at the New York City Marathon in 2:13:35 to finish ninth overall on what was a really warm day that, you know, there was tons of carnage on the course and we all saw how the race played out. Earlier in the spring, he ran a personal best of 2:08:52 at the Boston Marathon, and we did an episode after that performance, if you haven't listened to that. In case you haven't watched it yet, we also paid Scott a visit in Boulder about 2 weeks before this race and filmed a video on a 12-mile easy run where we just peppered him with questions while I was in the car, Mac was in the back filming. You could watch it on the Sidious Mag YouTube channel. But for now, let's unpack another great marathon performance. Here is Scott Fauble. Scott Fauble back, time number 7, I think, on the podcast. I went back and I looked, and your first appearance, 2017, before you were even a marathoner. But as is tradition, anytime you have a good marathon performance, we unpack it here on the Sidious Mag podcast. So welcome back, Scott.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be collecting equity now that I've been on here 7 times. I'm looking forward to that showing up in my portfolio any day now.
Let's dive into the last couple of days. So how are you feeling post-marathon?
I'm feeling good. My body's feeling better than I expected it to. Might run this week, but I might not. So the body feels fine. I'm enjoying my time off, but I don't feel like I need it as badly as previous marathons.
So that's how physically you're feeling, but kind of processing the performance, ninth place overall, top American. What would you grade that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was probably an A-. It went really well. I was talking to my wife a little bit about it, right after the race, and she's just like, "You don't really seem happy." And I think she was probably right. I don't know that I'm had the same elation, the same joy that I felt after some marathons, particularly the two Bostons that went really well, where I was closing a freight train, I was coming home. But I'm really, really proud of this one. I feel like I executed it better than I have a marathon before. I think it was maybe my savviest marathon. but it just like, you know, like I've been seventh at marathon majors, so ninth doesn't feel as good. I've run 208, so 213 doesn't feel as good. And I know that those are all extrinsic and it shouldn't, but it just doesn't feel like maybe quite as good as some of those other ones. But I'm like, I understand that I did really well and it was like I made all the right choices and like all my measures of success I met. It just, I don't necessarily have the joy. It's more pride right now.
Because the way the race unfolded, most of what people got to watch was Daniel Do Nascimento just taking off. And right from the get-go, I guess I was able to see all of it unfold from the lead truck. On the Verrazano Bridge, there was the immediate split where it was, all right, you have your leaders, and then there's a battle for it. It didn't feel like top American at the time because Galen and Shadrack went ahead. What went into sort of your decision to just stay with that backpack, whereas Galen and Shadrack, two guys who I guess you're within striking distance of, like you decided to play it a little bit more conservatively.
Yeah, I mean, you know, New York typically is not a course where you're super time focused, but I think with the conditions, I felt like 212 was going to do really, really well, and I felt like we were going to, like, if you ran the race perfectly, you were going to run 2 to 3 minutes slower than you would on a New York that was like good conditions or like really good conditions. So my feeling from the start was like, you can't do what you can't do. Like, you know, and in those conditions too, like if you run perfectly, it's 2 minutes different. But if you make a mistake, if you go too fast, that 2 minutes can turn into 8 minutes, it can turn into 10 minutes, it can turn into 12 minutes. Which is like, you know, that's like so abhorrent to the way I feel like you should run a marathon that I just didn't, I knew early that like, you're kind of going to time trial this. Like, you're kind of going to see how fast you can get to the finish line, and you just need to have faith that other people are going to mess it up and you're going to be closing well in the last 10 miles, and other people are going to be moving backwards. So, I was sort of targeting trying to run like 212 flat or 212 mid, and just I had faith that other people weren't going to be able to do that, and other people weren't going to make the decisions that were going to put them in a position to do that. I mean,
That sound, yeah.
you look at the guys who went out in 63, like the course record is 205. And that was Geoffrey Mutai, who's incredible on a perfect day. And these guys go out within spitting distance of 205 pace. Like, what are we doing here? You know, like I get wanting to put yourself in a position to win, but even the winner ran 63-65. Like, nobody executed it to the best of their abilities. You didn't have to be in that lead pack to have a shot to win or a shot to be top five.
Just the level of detail, just kind of in crunching some of those numbers and thinking of what 212 is going to be worth on that day. Is that a conversation between you and Joe the night before? I saw you kind of the day, Mac and I saw you at the hotel beforehand, and you were just kind of pretty level-headed. You're like, yeah, I'm ready. I feel fit. When does that sort of calculation take place?
Yeah, the whole week of I'd been looking at the forecast, and I'd mentioned like I've run marathons in sort of soupy conditions before, or like not marathons, sorry, but like half marathons, and it was one of those things where on the start line you felt fine, it didn't feel that hot, but as soon as you get going, like the rate of perceived exertion was going to be too high, so I knew what to expect, and I talked to Joe the day before, and we both decided, look, you know, because 2 weeks ago when we assumed the weather was going to be good. He was like, I think you can run 209, 210 on this course. The next, you know, the day before the race, we're looking at the forecast and he's like, look, I think this is going to be 2 to 3 minutes slow. And so I just sort of had that ballpark in my head and was like, I'm not going to go too fast. I know what 212 is. It's 502s. And we're just going to try to be 502s are honestly even slower. I wanted to be giving back time as opposed to taking it away in the first half. So yeah, so we just sort of kind of had a ballpark idea of what I could do and what I couldn't.
Is there enough time on the Verrazano Bridge to count the number of guys ahead of you? Because then it's sort of like the race gets broken open in the chase pack on the Queensborough Bridge, and that's the part that breaks Galen and he drops out. So you're running this entire thing. Do you even realize that you're in ninth place, 10th place, and just kind of working your way up?
No, I had no idea. Because I think, so like I, like Boston in the spring, when I was passing people, I had like at least an idea. I knew like halfway I was about 20th. And then as I was catching people, I was sort of counting down. And then, but it, at New York, people were like dropping out and I didn't even see them. So like, I never saw Galen. I never saw like a lot of people who dropped out. It's just all of a sudden I came back into the Bronx and I heard someone say, "Hey, you're ninth or whatever." And then when I saw Joe the second time at like 23, 24, like on Fifth Ave, he was like, "You could get fifth today. Like fifth place is available if you really, really go for it." And obviously I couldn't, but yeah, so I had a vague idea, but I had no idea until like 21 that I was in the top 10. I did know I was the top American, because Joe at like 18 told me Galen DNF'd, and then I caught Shadrach and I caught Lenny, and I knew that those were the only two Americans ahead of me. So that was a boost, but I didn't know what place I was overall.
What do you take away from a race like this that could be valuable for something down the line, like the trials? Cause it's sort of like, once again, you managed to execute a race plan that got you top American, and that's kind of what's going to matter in Orlando in a couple of, in a little over a year. Is there anything you can learn from racing the East Africans and the Japanese runners that are ahead of you that is valuable towards something like the trials?
Yeah. I mean, I think this wasn't the place where I necessarily learned it, because I wouldn't say I was like racing with Suguru and racing with, Shura Katata and those guys. But I think when you are in a race like that and you see like the level of pace shift that they're able to do, you know, like it's not hard for Katata to run a 440 in the middle of a race. And I've experienced that before. Like if you can sort of weather that storm, if you can put yourself in position to run well in a race like that, like there's no American who can run a 440 mid race and then be good, you know, be good to go. At least not right now. Maybe people will take a step up in the next 15 months, but, so I think the trials are like a much more muted, a much easier type of race to plan for. People have sort of a smaller like pace window, maybe fewer tools. It's a little bit more of a predictable race than it would be if like you were jammed in a Boston or a New York, where some of the guys in the race are like legitimate world beaters.
Yeah. So 14 months out, how do we size up? Is it too early to, you know, kind of take a look at U.S. men's marathoning and say it seems like it always is, it's wide open at the top, but we still don't even know what the World Athletics standards are going to be for Tokyo, for Paris, where the top three at the trials auto qualify, or if you still need to have the time, which if it's similar to what the Budapest standards are, then you're in a good spot right now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that feels like a first take segment to me, where it's like the trials have been announced. Who are your top three? And it's like, well, we have 15 months. Like,
yeah.
You know, like two people who aren't even on the radar will jump up. You know, a couple people who are on sort of the top tier will have like a bad spring. You know, like there's so much shuffling to do. I don't think it's that helpful for, I think that seems like a media take, not really like something that would be helpful for me to like prognosticate about. But I think you should do it. I think Sidious would do great if they had like six people guess their way too early marathon teams.
We already do. We put out the graphic already.
Sick.
And some people, you know, chimed in. But yeah, I mean, like, if we think about just the way that, what was it? There was that whole conversation around in, what was it, 2000 and 18 it was, right? When it was like everyone's making the big hubbub about men aren't breaking 210 anymore, and then you guys kind of just broke that wide open and things changed really quickly. So 14 months out, I mean, I feel like, yeah, we could have multiple guys in that 207, 208 range with yourself included. Yeah.
I sure hope so. I think the trials will be fast as long as it's not like horrible conditions. I can't imagine the Orlando race will be hilly. And I think when you have like that big group of guys who are going to sell out to get as far as they can in the lead pack, then I think could see like a 207, 208 type of race taking place.
What was your reaction to the selection of Orlando?
Dude, I was just glad that they announced somewhere. Good Lord, it's been, we're 14 months away. Like, you know, I feel like we knew Atlanta way before, and what are we doing here? 14 months, come on, guys. So I was just happy that we have a course.
Having one of the faster personal bests right now of a potential field, you probably feel better about it being a faster race, but then you have the whole crowd of people also saying like, well, we want, you know, with the elevation gain that the Paris course is going to have, like we should select a team that is probably best suited to that. And that's what Atlanta sort of did. So, do you lean one way or the other there?
Did Atlanta do that? Atlanta was like the hilliest marathon I've ever, like the hilliest marathon course ever made. That wasn't like a gimmick, you know? So, I don't think that Atlanta did that at all, but I don't think I had put no stock in that. It's just like, it's just running, you know, it's just running.
Right. It's like, if you yeah. train for a flat race, like whoever gets selected is going to do what's necessary to train
for a hilly race.
Race.
Yeah. And like, frankly, I don't think that the Olympic trials have ever been like a way to select the best team, you know, like why would you have like a, if you really wanted to pick your best team for the marathon, why would you risk one of your stars like getting hurt in the buildup and not making it, like just having a bad day? Like you would just push your stars to the front of the line. The Olympic trials are about having an event and having a like unimpeachable way to pick a team. They're not about selecting the best team, which is fine. That's fine. Like this is an entertainment product. Like it's not about, it doesn't have to, everything not doesn't have to be about fairness. So I'm good.
So if Scott was commissioner of USATF, how would you do it? Just pick the top three?
No. I like that it's a trials.
Oh, okay.
I think that's good. I just think that the idea that this is the best way to pick a team is incorrect.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Sidious Mag podcast is also supported by Garmin. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably seen me showing off my Forerunner 955 Solar. It's my favorite piece of running tech because it's jam-packed with so many features that make it more than just a running watch. Garmin has successfully done that across its entire Forerunner line because when you're not running, it's gathering everything from your body battery, your sleep record, HRV, stress measurements, and so much more for free. You don't need to have a separate subscription and you don't need to wear a secondary device now. Personally, I've been putting a major emphasis on recovery. So to understand how your body is recovering and to get ready for that next training session, Garmin has improved its sleep monitoring feature. After waking up, you'll receive a sleep score as well as a breakdown of your sleep stages, and they'll also provide some additional insights for improved sleep quality. There's nothing better than seeing that you scored a 90 on sleep. Get the most of your training and take things to the next level with Garmin's Forerunner series. I've been wearing it for a couple months now and I'm still discovering new features and apps along the way. Visit Garmin.com for more information on the Forerunner 955 and the Forerunner 255. It's the series that Runner's World says is, quote, more accurate than ever. Visit Garmin.com today. All right, you got sent in a lot of questions on Instagram.
Okay.
So we're going to try and go through as many of them as possible. Let's start with, a lot of people were curious about the Nike contract. We saw you 24 hours before the race, handed you a nice hat for you to wear. And then you text us that, hey, you know, deal came through. You're not wearing the hat. So someone asked, all of this just to avoid wearing the Sidious Mag hat. All right.
Exactly. It was ugly as hell, man.
Someone asked, what would you have worn if the Nike deal didn't come through? But when I saw you, you were decided on Alpha Flies.
Yeah. I've been I had been training in, like going into the weekend, it seemed like there were enough number of companies we were kind of down the road far enough with where it was a possibility. So I had been training in different shoes, the whole block. So kind of every time that my agent Josh, like told me that he had had a good conversation with the company, I would make sure to try their shoes before kind of we went farther down that road. So I was ready for kind of anything, but if no deal had come through, I would have worn the Alpha Flies for sure.
Someone did ask, were you a little concerned having to wear like a kit top that you'd never worn before? Like nipple chafing or anything? None of that?
No, man, I got good nipples. We were fine. I wasn't too worried about that. Nice strong iron nipples. That's what they call me, old Scotty Iron Nips.
That's the quote graphic for this one.
Yeah.
Do you prefer tougher, quote, tougher marathons with heat, hills, etc., to faster marathons, cold and flat? That's from JP version 3.0 on Instagram.
Good question, JP. Yeah, I mean, I think I like Boston to New York. Those are the two races I like, and those happen to be like hilly and hard. Because I like them because A, they pay really good appearance fees to Americans, and B, those are the races like they're not paced. I think I have a shot to compete up near the front. Like, like look at Berlin last year. Like, Kipchoge went out in 59:40. Like my half marathon PB is 101:11. So like if I go to like London or Berlin, like I could run amazing. I could run so good and just not see the front of a race. And at least at Boston or New York, I have a shot to be up front and a shot to be a factor in the race, which is just not the case at these like quote unquote faster marathons. Plus, like I do like money. So like getting paid appearance fees is pretty sick as well.
Kyle and I got into that discussion while recapping the New York City Marathon, where it's like, whose year would you rather have, Eliud Kipchoge or Evans Chebet, where you win Boston and New York or you break the world record? We kind of forgot that Kipchoge also won Tokyo, and he ran the fifth fastest time there. So that's like a really good year. But all right, hypothetically, this is the year of your life, and it's never going to get better than this. Would you rather win Boston and New York in the same year or break the world record?
I think as an American, winning Boston and New York in the same year would be like, I mean, you'd be on the Mount Rushmore. You'd have to be. Like, that would be so iconic. Like these two things that you dream to get one of in your entire career, you get into the same year. Like, hell yeah, sign me up.
When we put it out on a graphic, the European followers and international people obviously thought that we were crazy for it, and that Kipchoge's the runaway answer. But I mean, it's to Americans, we get the point of like why it's the Evans Chebet year instead of the Kipchoge year. But running
Yeah, I
fast,
imagine like
yeah.
for Europeans, it would be like, would you rather have your team, like, have your soccer team win like the Champions League and the Premier League in the same year? Or would you rather have your favorite player, like, win the player of the year for three straight years? Like, no, you'd rather have them do the two most important things in your life. That'd be awesome. That'd be sick.
Yeah. Runner Sophie wants to know, did Nike deliver all the kit items or send them to like the flagship store the day before the race? They sent Josh.
Yeah, they sent Josh. No, Josh delivered the Nike people had stuff in one of their rooms and gave the kit to Josh, and he dropped it off at my room at like 10 the night before the race.
Nice.
But like I was at dinner when I agreed to the terms of the deal, and my wife and I Ubered over to the Nike store, got a pair of trainers, got a pair of sweatpants and a top in case that I, because we knew they had a kit. We didn't know if like they would have like warm up stuff. Because like it was like the race was less than 12 hours away. Just in case I went over to the Nike store and picked up a few things. But no, they delivered all the stuff to my room, or to Josh, who delivered it to my room.
Was there anything like interesting to this contract negotiation aside from, I guess, like, I mean, it was probably more stressful for Josh, but the fact that you basically had a deadline of whether it
Yeah.
got done or not beforehand, right?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like I don't think that Nike would have been like would have like left the table the day after the race, but yeah, it was sweet to have a bonus contract and like a bonus structure and and just like a deal before the race. That was awesome. That was great. I had been wanting a deal for, you know, months, but so yeah.
JW Lesniak asks, where was your post-marathon burrito? You've changed it up recently, right? Like in terms of just like, or is it always still a post-race burrito?
I don't force it. I don't force it. I like to, I'm a kind of a go with the flow guy. So I didn't have like one that day. But since then I've imbibed numerous times. Especially now that I'm back in Portland. I live like 5 blocks away from a place called Super Burrito Express, which is like top tier stuff. And then yeah, there's like 4 or 5 really good Mexican places nearby.
How much did that go into factoring into buying a house that close to it?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping for the apartment above it, but my wife was like, you know, it'd be nice to have a yard. You know, like the smell is like they might get old. And I was like, okay, well, you know, as long as we're in like a walking distance radius from Super Burrito Express, I guess we can make that concession.
Let's see what else we got here. I mean, people want to know how this marathon build compared to the New York City one in 2018. You know, both very different, under different coaches. You wrote a book on the last one. So
I did.
What would be some of the major things that changed up this time around?
I mean, Joe's training is like, I think, built on a lot of the same principles as Ben's, like very strength based, very good at getting really efficient at marathon pace. But he just sort of does it differently. So instead of doing, we don't really do steady states, don't really do a ton of stuff at marathon pace. So just did some stuff over pace, some stuff under pace, and then spun the legs a few times with 400s, and like 10 days out did some hard Ks, and that was kind of it.
This show is presented by Velus Recovery Footwear. Velus is an active recovery footwear brand designed to help you restore, revive, and re-energize before and after you train. After 2 years in development, this team has created the world's most comfortable, supportive, and lightweight active recovery shoe in the world. We talk a lot about high performance and training on the Sidious Mag podcast, but I want to take a second and tell you about something equally important to performing your best, and that's recovery. This is something that I've learned over the years, and I can't stress it enough. Take the time to recover properly. One recovery trick is to make sure that you're putting on the right footwear after your run, because your feet take a beating whether you're training or you're racing. And a new brand that Kyle and I have discovered over the last couple months is Velus Active Recovery Footwear. This brand was started by 3 athletic footwear industry veterans that really know what they're doing. They created what they call Tri-Motion Underfoot technology that cushions, supports, and flexes in all of the right spots and is engineered to let your feet heal faster and better. Plus, these shoes are so lightweight. I've been wearing them for a while now and absolutely love them. I rock them to and from a track workout. Kyle puts them on after races. Velus Active Recovery Footwear should be in your footwear mix and part of your plan to perform at your best. So check out Velus Footwear at velusfootwear.com. That's V-E-L-O-U-S footwear.com. Grab a pair today and get 20% off with discount code SidiousMag20. Use capital C and capital M in that discount code SidiousMag20 at checkout. Now you can experience what recovery footwear should feel like. The Sidious Mag podcast is also presented by Final Surge. No matter if you're an athlete or a coach, Final Surge helps plan and attain both short and long-term training success. Their free online training log is compatible with Garmin, Strava, Polar, Stride, Coros, and a slew of other apps and devices. If you're a coach, Final Surge makes planning and analyzing workouts super simple and helps streamline that communication between you and your athletes. Some of the top coaches in the world who have been guests on this show use it on a daily basis. If you're an athlete out there hammering out miles and tempo runs solo with no guidance or direction, Final Surge is also here to offer up some world-class training programs. Get yourself a training plan for that fall 10K or that half marathon or that full that's on your calendar. They've got plans from NAZ Elite. You can hit some classics with Greg McMillan or Boston Marathon champion Andy Burfoot, who are on there as coaches. If you're a fan of the sport and are curious how the pros are training, Stephanie Bruce and the rest of the NAZ Elite squad share all of their training logs on Final Surge. Give it all a look at finalsurge.com and use code Sidious for 10% off plans and coaching subscriptions. I can't recommend it enough. Finalsurge.com, code Sidious for 10% off. Back to the show we go.
Emma chimed in with a couple questions here.
Emma Coburn?
Yep. How is it being on the Boss Ladies group text?
Oh, it's great. You know, I've tried not to. I imagine there's some ladies specific text topics that I've really tried not to infringe upon. You know, that's sort of, that's their space. I don't want to, you know, sometimes it's good for a white man to step away from a conversation, you know? So, try to be respectful of their lady talk. And, the Boss Ladies are fun. They're great. A lot of jokes, some of which are like long running and I don't understand, but but I'm very grateful to them, and they've been so welcoming over the last 9 months. And you know, training with Emma Bates too, who was wonderful. So yeah,
what's your biggest contribution to the group text?
Jokes mostly. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Are you referred to as Boss Babe, Boss Boy? That's Carolyn Funtineau asks that question.
I would consider myself a boss babe. Boss boy sounds like, that's maybe like Boss Baby's sequel a couple years down the road. I consider myself a babe, and now I'm working with Joe, I'm obviously a boss babe.
Emma asks, did his thighs feel exposed running in split shorts after only ever wearing half tights?
Good question. Yeah, definitely. They were just way wider than I expected, but it was too soggy. It was too hot and humid. Like, you know, half tights in that weather was just, you're just asking for some sort of rash or some sort of heat situation down there. And we had to get a little more ventilation.
She's got three more questions here.
Okay, sick. Emma, you can just text me.
Favorite build of this workout?
Favorite workout
of this build. Yeah, I can't read.
I had some really, really good long runs, but I liked, we did some alternating Ks. So like K at, whatever, 3 minutes, and then K at like 5:40 pace. So I thought that was a really good one. I did that something similar a few times in Flagstaff, but I liked the one that we did with Joe. We did that twice, I think.
Favorite things about Haley?
Favorite things about Haley, my wife.
Which is, I think, like, it's the first time on the podcast that you refer to her as my wife, which, like, it's got to take some getting used to. Like, the first couple times, you feel tempted to say it in the Borat accent.
My wife. Yeah, no, let's see. No, she's, my wife's wonderful. She's very, very supportive. I imagine not a lot of wives would let their husband go to Boulder for 9 to 10 weeks to train with his team. But I really appreciate that she, one thing I like about our relationship is that we've never like sort of stood in the way of each other's dreams, even when it maybe puts more of a strain on our relationship than we would like. Like, we were living in Flagstaff, and then Haley went to PT school in Oregon for 3 years. And, you know, that was tough, but I think it really set a precedent and a foundation of our relationship where we're going to make the relationship work without sacrificing our like professional and personal ambitions. So I think that is sort of my favorite part of our relationship.
So now, do you have sort of a couple weeks before you kind of look at the calendar and work back from a spring marathon like Boston, and you're just like, all right, well, it's going to be 12 more weeks again back in Boulder. And it really kind of makes you truly appreciate that time a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I'm probably going to run Boston in the spring, and I'll be in Boulder for 8 to 10 weeks before that. And so just kind of hang out and do as much fun stuff with Haley as I can for the until that time comes. So yeah.
Favorite things about Joe and Nick?
So for those who don't know, Nick's our assistant coach. Let's see, favorite things about Joe and Nick. Nick has a great sense of humor. He's always very lighthearted. I like that he comes to practice with sort of a bright and like sort of jokey vibe. Nice to keep things light. And I think Joe, from a coaching standpoint, I appreciate that he's very curious. I think that's, he like has his guiding principles that he really believes in training wise, but I find that he's very curious and sort of skeptical of sort of traditional knowledge, which I think is interesting and probably helpful that he doesn't sort of get sucked into these more traditional ideas about how to train.
We've got some more questions from Bill. So here's Billy Tip asking, does signing with Nike kill your brand of hating on the University of Oregon as a Portland guy?
I don't think so. I think it'll be okay. This will probably be the last time I discuss that, but I don't think that it has to change the way my heart feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple people ask what's next basically. So, I mean, I'm guessing do you want to give Houston Half a shot or something like that?
I think Houston Half will maybe be a little close. Because if you think about, like, let's see, so I took last week off. Let's say I can do workouts by, like, feel good doing workouts by the last week of November, 5 weeks, or what is that, like 7 weeks maybe to Houston. I'm sure I could go and, like, run 61 high or so, but that doesn't really do much for me on Houston's course, and I'd kind of rather just train and get ready for the fall marathon or the spring marathon. I'd love to do something, some sort of race in the buildup, but only if training is going well.
You were going back to Joe. Erica Benko asked, favorite Joe quote or advice?
Quote or advice? He's big on you can run fast but not hard, and there's a difference. So I think that's been good. Really trying to work on that and find that zone where the splits are good, but the effort is still pretty smooth and easy. Cause that's kind of what the marathon is, you know, like, you know, I can run in the low 450s, but I can't necessarily like press for 26 miles.
There was another one here about your arm workout routine, and this is sort of like, I guess when people brought up your arms and I was scrolling through these, I was like, oh well, we're now just going back to like the comment section of the YouTube video where
yeah.
You had like 20 people diagnosing you with an injury like 2 weeks before the race, and Mac and I were talking about it. We're just like, he's just running slow. He just doesn't, you know, look all that great when he's running slow. But then you post like a workout video and you look totally fine. So it's just,
yeah,
some people just don't look that great when they hit the brakes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a tight hip, and I was sort of dealing with some like tightness back there. So when you're not getting like full extension through your hip, you can kind of, your upper body tends to try to save it. So yeah, my arms looked horrible. They looked horrible in that video. Like I was collapsing over my hip and I was trying to save like my hip extension with my chest. So I would, you know, don't do what I was doing in the race if you're an average runner, or in the video, if I was an average runner. But no, we got that cleaned up before the race and kind of loosened some stuff up back there. So, you know, I've never been like the perfect biomechanical runner. Sometimes I have to run well despite of that, but so don't, you know, I wouldn't look to me as a way to start to inspire your better form.
Hey, at the end of the day, someone at Nike watched that video and was like, yes, sign us
Yeah,
up for
hell
that.
yeah. Yeah. They were like, ah, the form's not great, but he's like, he's pretty funny. So we got this.
JL Quentin 94 asks, favorite and least favorite mile of the course?
Favorite mile. I mean, they might be the same mile, to be honest. Like, whatever it is, the mile leading up to going into the park, is that 2023?
23.
Yeah, like it sucks. It's so hard, but like it's really fun, especially if you're having at least some semblance of a good day. Yeah, I would say that one is probably it's both depending on the day, probably.
Can you hear the crowd much? I mean, like, you can hear noise coming from them, but is there, like, can you pick out certain things that people say to you here and there? Was there anything funny this time around?
Yeah, you can hear some things. You can't hear, I couldn't hear any individual like things on first for a while. Like when you turn off the Queensboro and it's like
Oh,
six
that's
people
so
deep,
loud.
yeah, it's just a cacophony. But later in the course, when it's like a little more spread out people wise, like up fifth, you can hear stuff. I heard Joe yelling. I think I heard a couple other people.
No follower, no pick asks, how does your internal monologue go in the hardest moments of a marathon? So, I mean, you're famous for, like, throwing out the, like, one line that is the motto, I guess, for the race, or the mantra. What was it for this one?
Let's see.
Pick a good rap lyric or something like
Yeah.
that.
This one was, it was much more about like staying positive than it was about like attacking, because like I had closed down the gap to Albert Career. I got it down to like 8 or 10 seconds. And every time I would try to like push, once I started going up fifth, like I would feel my hamstrings and my glutes grab. So like I knew that I couldn't like press. And then it started feeling like I was going to throw up. And so I knew I sort of had to just like ride this line. I knew I had a big gap behind me. So I knew I could be aggressive later, but not if I went now. So those last miles where I was really hurting, it was a lot about like not having a pity party, like just staying positive, like move, you're going to keep moving forward. You're keeping moving forward. And I kept kind of trying to get myself to 800 to go. Because I figured once I got to 800 to go, like, if I cramped and had to stop, like whatever, like, but if I cramped and had to stop 2 miles out, like that could turn into minutes. So I just kept telling myself, get to 800 to go, get to 800 to go, get to 800 to go. No pity parties. Keep moving forward. Stay positive. Like, don't, stay awake, stay moving forward. So it was more about keeping things tight as opposed to like really attacking. I've had that feeling in the past, and that's way more fun. But yeah, just getting to 800 to go.
Of the people you passed who looked like the absolute worst, I felt bad for Shadrach because, like,
Chatter.
Shadrach went out so hard, and unlike Galen, like, he didn't drop out. And kind of
Yeah.
in hearing Reed talk a little bit about some of the way that appearance contracts are structured, like, he probably got a big bonus for his debut, and sometimes that appearance fee and that bonus is reliant upon the fact that you cross the finish line. So you're going to get there no matter what. And so I could see a situation where Shadrach was going backwards, but still needed to get to the finish line to, collect the check.
Yeah, he looked bad. He looked bad. So I passed Dosi, what's his name?
Donasmite, yeah.
Yeah. He was not in on the race course anymore, but he was laying on the sidewalk, like kind of grabbing his stomach. So that's pretty rough. It's tough to look worse than that. And then, like I caught Martin Hare, Marty, at like 14 or 15, and it was pretty clear he was gonna have a long day.
Yeah.
So, those are probably the top three there. But
Yeah.
at least Shaddy and Marty were like still moving forward.
Yeah, Donasmente was toast for the day. Okay, so
Yeah.
to bring him up, right? Like, we can call it stupid. Like, it was dumb to go out that hard and try and do that on New York's course on that record-setting hot day. But do you feel like Kyle was like, yeah, you know, if you're him, you just keep throwing shit at the wall, and at some point, like, it's gonna stick and he'll nail it. And he's run 204 in the past, so it's not like the gap at one point was 2.5 minutes. There was a point where I was like, he could run away with it. It's just not going to be super fast. But the people in the lead pack were just not concerned whatsoever. They knew he was going to come back at some point.
No, I mean, those guys in the lead group went out too fast and he was way ahead of them. Like, there's a difference between like being aggressive and being dumb, you know, like had he like chilled for 10 miles and then pressed, like maybe, yeah, maybe that works. But the way he did it, there was just 0% chance that it worked. So I appreciate Kyle's optimism for that kit guy, but that was dumb. That was very dumb. Cause like, if that's the way you want to run, that's fine. That's fine. Go to Berlin, go to New York, or go to Berlin or go to London and get behind a pacer and go out wild fast. But like, if you want to like run well, then you kind of got to take what the course is going to give you, take what the day is going to give you. And that's not really how you run, or he didn't run the way you run New York. I would be interested if anyone has ever soloed like point to point at New York and won. At some point you have to give some time back to the course respect it.
In your gambling brain, live betting that marathon probably would have been really fun. Joe Nascimento at the start, what would you have put his odds? 204 personal best, maybe he was like 10th or something like that, 8th, you know, on the descending order list. What were his odds, and then how would they have changed up until the point that he got to the Bronx? Well, then at that point, it's like, yeah, anyone who put money on him lost, but...
Yeah. I would say he was probably... I mean, because 204 is moving. He doesn't... I don't think he has quite the, like, resume as someone like Suguru or Galen or Shura Katata or Chibet. So he would probably be, like, 7th on the list, which is usually, like, plus 1,300. Plus 1,500, maybe.
Then at 5K, how do those odds change?
Well, I think they would have dropped. I think once he had once he got out to the lead, I don't think they would have changed much at 5K.
At
I think
10K?
I think by the time he got to like 15K, we would have seen him like plus 250, maybe at halfway, he would have even been down to even money, but like, that was never going to be a good bet. Not even if you got it early when he was still out front, but or when he was still like sort of in contact. But yeah, no, I think he would have dropped to maybe even minus odds at halfway because he was so far ahead. But that's dumb money.
For you, remember when we said on the run, we set the odds for you as top American. Galen drops out. How does that change the odds?
They definitely would have gotten like better. Let's see. I think so. At halfway, I would have been the 6th American, I think, because there was Galen, Lenny, Shadrach, Nathan Martin, Marty ahead. And I think if you look at the splits, I would have definitely, it was pretty clear I was going to catch Marty. Nathan was ahead, but not by very much. And then the first three were, I think, 3 minutes ahead of me, 2.5 minutes ahead of me at halfway. So I probably would have gone backwards at halfway. I probably would have been more like 1,800 or 2,000. And then once we got into Manhattan, I think it would have been like dropping fast, because like Shadrach couldn't have been moving well over the Queensboro Bridge. Like, Lenny couldn't have been feeling good on First Ave, because when I caught them both, there was lights out, you know, they were not covering that. And then I imagine I would have moved to minus odds at like 17 or 18. And then I caught Lenny at 19, because he was not moving fast. I covered like 40 seconds on him in that mile.
The gamblers who would have put money on Sharon Lochetti probably would have been like really happy at the end of the day. I mean, it just kind of going into that amount of detail, we're never going to get to a point where you can live bet a world marathon major, but to the point, like, look how fun it would have been. It would have been to be able to do that. So,
I don't think never.
You know, I think it just takes way too much monitoring and manpower that I don't think there's that many right people who follow it that can toy with the things.
I think it would just take an algorithm.
Okay.
I think if you're like, if you can, I think all it would take is like a Boston or a New York or a London or a Berlin, like partnering with FanDuel or DraftKings. And then you set the odds, the look ahead odds. And then you basically attach the gambling app to the tracking and put the gambling on like a 20 second delay or whatever, you know, of like with the broadcast, so right. That you can, so the whatever it takes for the app to be ahead of the broadcast, and then it should know pretty much immediately, like you, and it just updates every, you know, at every marker. So it would update like 5K, 10K, 15K, 20K, halfway, 25, you know, like you could put more mats on the course for gambling purposes too. And as long as the algorithm has time to get ahead of it, I think it would be, very profitable.
If it's not too late, John Hancock is out at the Boston Marathon. I think we just found the DraftKings 2023 Boston Marathon.
That's right. Yeah. Because I have faith that, like, if you can bet on like Korean baseball, or like if you can go to like, there's an off-track betting site near my house. If you can go to the Wishing Well and bet on like horse races in Australia, like this is all, like on ESPN and on NBC. Like, ESPN has now dedicated feeds for all of the races. Like, there, people want to bet on this. They would bet on it. And I don't know if they would bet on it enough to justify lines, but I don't think it would be that hard to make lines and make and update them.
I think you've got a whole career for yourself. Post running.
I got to learn how to code.
All right. Final question that was submitted on Instagram that I saw was, what is it about the presentation of marathons broadcast or whatever that you want to see changed or improved upon?
Well, I think the, obviously I didn't watch New York, but I think the four dedicated streams is good. I heard that they didn't have commentary. Is that correct? Or were you on?
On the app, they didn't have commentary.
Gotcha.
But on the TV, the ESPN and the WABC broadcast, there was play-by-play and analysis.
Yeah. So I think giving people a way to watch all four streams and provide like at least commentary for one at a time would be huge. And then, I mean, like, just look at F1. Just do it. Just copy whatever F1's doing. Like, have a live leaderboard. Have live splits. Like, if you just look at F1 and what the Tour de France is doing, it's like, hey, they figured it out. They figured it out. It's so easy. It's so easy to watch. Like, have the live map. Have the tracking. Show, like, projected times based on current pace. Like, I think that's the move, is to have a graphic on the side of the screen that's showing the leaderboard, and also showing, you could have a ticker on the bottom that's showing like, if this person runs this pace to the end, what's their finishing time, so that you could actually at least sort of piece together what the mid-race moves are, because I understand that there's like a limited number of cameras and a limited number of like attention to switch between them, but at least on the, if you had a virtual leaderboard, which again, like, all you need is a computer program that doesn't take a person on a motorcycle and a camera to be like updating people on mile splits of the second and third group. Like, all you need is the app basically to go onto the screen.
Yeah. I mean, they did the thing on the track where it's sort of like the distance from the next person based off of the chip in the bib. And
yeah.
It's like, on the track, I'm less interested, but on the roads, it'd be so much more fascinating to see like, oh, Scott Faubel's only, you know, 300 meters back now, 250 meters back of Galen Rupp or something like that. It's just,
yeah,
you know, it adds intrigue where, you know, you're not getting the lead camera time, but you were still able to follow along with how your race is going in that way. So,
yeah. And I think people would be interested in just how quickly a marathon can go poorly.
Yeah.
You know, like, people can like really, really blow up. And I don't know that that's something that people, that like that your casual viewer understands, but seeing someone come from, you know, 2.5 minutes or 3 minutes back at halfway to catch people, I think would be interesting to people.
Yeah. All right, Scott. So recovery wise, golf today? Is that the plan?
Golf today. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely some active recovery. We're going to go try to hit some fairways. You know, the game is, I was good about getting out once or twice a week when I was in Boulder, but it's been a couple of weeks here. So we're just trying to get the game back on track. Just trying to get the game back on track, Chris. We're aiming for middle of the fairways, middle of the greens. Let's make some putts. I'd love to shoot high 80s today. Just as long as it's not a travesty, I think we'll be okay.
Is there a golf course that's on your bucket list to check off?
Yeah, bucket list.
Augusta.
Augusta, of course, yeah. No, I would love to go to Bandon Dunes. And now that I live in Oregon, that seems possible. And then I think going to play in like Scotland and Ireland would be sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Pinehurst in the Carolinas. So I got plenty of bucket list courses. But at my heart, I'm a Muni guy, Chris. I love rolling up. I love getting paired with a random guy in jean shorts. I like janky greens. I love quirky courses. So I like the cart girl driving around with $4 Coors. So I'm not a pretentious golf guy. I like those municipal courses. I like the city courses.
Awesome, Scott. All right. Well, I look forward to having you on for the 8th or 20th, whatever time it is after the next one. Always a pleasure. Scott Fauble.
Thanks, Chris.
That does it for another episode of the City of Smack podcast. Thanks for listening and supporting. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend, leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you want to contribute and support the show, you can also back us on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/cityofsmag or send over any tip or one-time donation over to City of Smack on Venmo. You guys are all the best. Thanks for listening. Legs are feeling good. I'm Chris Chavez. See you next time.